for checking the sound on that. 12 months because we need to go through a full season with the way people use a car wash and the way people enjoy their properties varies by the season. And so there may be things we pick up at 12 months that we might not have picked up right away. So I can do a 3-month if you want, but I also want to see the 12-month, much as we did, the same kind of conditioning as was done for the human being, which happily passed those markers without any problems, consistent with its sound study. I do want to see that signage potentially no freeway access as a sign, because that's what people are thinking. I can get onto the highway. And if you say, no, you can't, that also helps. Could you, speaking of traffic, could you pull up how the traffic's going to, something, the site plan that will show how the traffic flows out of the car wash and where on the lot it flows? Because they come out of the car wash, or we don't have that, okay. They come out of the car wash at the very back of that property. Okay, yes. So what I want to see, want to make sure that there's no exit to El Camino from the very back of that property right next to the bridge, but the people have to come out further so that the traffic coming over the bridge from those residential areas can be seen. Is that consistent with the plan? Okay, great. Then I'm good with that. And I'm comfortable with shutting the hours off of operation at 7 p.m. I think we could do that for simplicity's sake, for year-round basis, that it has to end at 7 p.m. And it would not surprise me at all if the operators want to end it earlier in the wintertime. But I don't think we have to go there in the permanent conditions of the property.
Okay, thank you, Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. I think staff understands our direction, so I won't talk about my ideas for signage and no left turns or no right turns, so I'll let you guys figure that out. I'm in favor of doing the phasing of the project 1, 2, and 3. I do agree that there should be a noise study. I'll leave it up to staff's discretion on that. Set hours. I think that we should be matching hours to that of existing car washes that are already have residential development around it. I think staff wasn't completely sure about the hours, but I'd like to see it closed a little earlier and match what our existing car washes are doing. I'm not concerned with the stacking in the parking lot. I'm mostly concerned about the stop sign at the northbound 101 on ECR. I know that the applicants are going to handle their opening. Their staff is amazing at handling their load. What I'm more concerned about is the impact to our city, as well as the access for Home Depot and using residential corridors like San Ramon to bypass having to do that stop sign. So if people are choosing not to do ECR to that direction, they're going to go San Ramon. So the more that we can have our traffic stay with the current traffic outline would be great. Other than that, I'm looking forward to Chick-fil-A. Thank you.
Thank you. I had just one quick kind of question that an audience member or a public member raised, just to reassure them. Car washes nowadays have to basically recapture all their water. No water is going to be flowing off site from a car wash, correct? And certainly not down across the railroad tracks.
That's absolutely correct. And not only the car wash, but any new development has to retain 100% of its stormwater on site. Yeah. So it has to all go into the ground on the property, which is a little bit different even than when this original center was built. But all these new developments have to do that. So one would assume that off-site flow is going to be enhanced over what's there today.
Got it. Okay, thank you. Just want to clarify that for the public. I agree with the conditions that my colleagues have mentioned. My question to you as staff is what we've been saying, is it clear enough? Do we need to take a break and have you define language in terms of change conditions? so we can come back and do that, or is it clear enough? And although I did want to say on the noise issue, I agree with Councilmember Peak that, you know, you're going to know pretty quick whether, you know, how this is playing out in people's backyards, so that we don't need to wait 6 months. And I also can understand Councilmember Funk's comments that about going through a year, whole year cycle. But I do not like imposing studies on applicants or business owners for the hell of it. If you know, we're 3 months into this and the neighbors have no complaints, we don't need a noise study. The proof is going to be in the pudding of, you know, if they've got a problem, I'll go sit in their backyard and listen with them. You know, we don't need to do a formal noise study or require one unless there are a lot of complaints. So for me, that's important in the conditioning, is to say, you know, we'll evaluate this after 3 months. I mean, and if a study is warranted, then we'll do it. But I don't want to say we'll do a study just for the hell of doing a study. So is
understood. And Mayor, if I may just repeat to you what we heard from you tonight and what we would modify in our conditions of approval. I'm also going to look to our city clerk to see if she wants us to actually read out those conditions of approval. But first, if I may, just go through the items that we heard collectively from council. The first one was on lighting, to retrofit existing lighting with shields on the site, especially the pole lights at the rear of the site, and to ensure that all new lighting installed on the site is properly shielded and in compliance with our night sky ordinance with our existing lighting standards. Second item we heard was limiting the hours of operation of the car wash to 7 p.m. The other item we heard that we want to look into is a noise evaluation for the site, especially the car wash, at a 6 month and a 12 month interval. And that not being a noise consultant, but a staff analysis, right? Have we heard complaints? Do we have concerns? And that's not something we bring back to council, but it would be staff level.
Yeah, I think you should change that to 3 and 12, but yeah.
3 and 12?
Yeah.
Okay, 3 and 12. And the other item we heard was about the signage on the road. And right now we do have two signs, one at the four-way intersection, one at the bridge, that do say not a through road, but it sounds like we want to enhance that with a skull and crossbones. Or we could say no freeway access.
We can leave that to Public Works.
Yes, I think that
what they think is most
Nick effective. And Nick's team are the sign experts for roadway signs. If you let me do it, it's going to get crazy. But we'll definitely be advised on that. And then the last thing we heard was about project phasing, to ensure that the two retail pads come first, to accommodate the Chick-fil-A and the other retail pad, and the car wash is a phase two or three.
And yeah, he said hours of operation. And just to be clear, I assume it's already in the conditions, but like Home Depot, we don't want the Chick-fil-A truck coming up at 4 a.m. and delivering chicken, right?
Delivery is correct, yes.
Okay, I mean, and it sounds like something's in there condition-wise.
Our city clerk does want us to...
Well, yeah, I think I do too. I would prefer if we could take a 5-minute break.
Okay,
and put
so let's
these
take a break.
The,
you guys
let us write
the
these really quick.
Wording.
We can read them back to you, and I think the developer should be aware of what we've written into the conditions
right.
as well.
That sounds
let's
good.
Do that. Thank you.
We'll take a break. It's 8:08. We'll come... You need 7 minutes or 12? 12? Okay, so we will come back at 8:20, and you will read us back the precise language of the changed conditions or added conditions. Thank you. And if you have the time, share them with the applicant before we reconvene.
AM 1230, KPRL, and 99.3 FM, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton. Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
On April 19th, 1995, 2 years to the day following the U.S. government's botched raid on the Branch Davidian compound near Waco, Texas, a rented truck pulled to the curb in front of the 9-story Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in downtown Oklahoma City. Inside the building,
Over 350 federal employees and visitors were beginning their workday.
With regard to this proceeding, basically...
In a building across the street, a meeting was being held by the Oklahoma City Water Resources Board. The meeting was being recorded. Then, at 9.04 a.m., came the explosion that would alter the American social and political landscape.
Basically, there are four elements that I have to receive information regarding.
Local radio and television stations rushed to the site, and the monstrous effects of the bombing were broadcast around the world.
My floor was okay, and the ceiling had come down, but there was still concrete above, so it was just a corner of the office that was left that we were in. Everybody else that we worked with is gone.
The building exploded into rubble. 167 people had been killed, 19 of them children, and hundreds were badly injured.
A blizzard of papers blowing out of offices that have been heavily damaged by this bomb in the downtown area. I'm just about 300 yards away from the front of this building that has been ripped off by this powerful blast. And yet, buildings all around me here have suffered extensive damage. Up on top of the roof of one of these buildings, a brick wall has been blown over. And on this fourth floor of this parking garage, the elevator doors have been blown off the hinges. That was the force of this blast. Ross Simpson, Oklahoma City.
It was the worst terrorist attack ever on U.S. soil, and the terrorists were American. Just 90 minutes after the explosion, Oklahoma police arrested 27-year-old Timothy McVeigh, a veteran of the Gulf War, for driving without a license. Evidence soon linked McVeigh and his friend Terry Nichols with the bombing, which was planned as an act of revenge against the U.S. government for what had occurred 2 years before near Waco. Both men stood trial for their crimes. In June 1997, Timothy McVeigh was convicted of murder and sentenced to die by lethal injection. 6 months later, Terry Nichols was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. He received a life sentence.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
Welcome to Heroes of the Air, true stories of those who flew for America and earned the nation's supreme military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Heroes of the Air is brought to you by the Air Force Association, an independent nonprofit aerospace organization which promotes public understanding of the role aerospace power plays in our national defense. Your host for Heroes of the Air is Gene Pell.
Fighter bombers were already in the air, en route to attack an important North Vietnamese industrial center. The mission's success depended on first destroying a key anti-aircraft defense complex containing surface-to-air missiles and an exceptionally heavy concentration of anti-aircraft artillery. Air Force Major Merlin Dethlefsen's plane was one of a flight of F-105s assigned to the fire suppression mission. In the air over North Vietnam, March 10, 1967. In the initial attack on the defensive complex, the lead aircraft was crippled, and Major Dethlefsen's plane was extensively damaged. He ignored the enemy's overwhelming firepower and the damage he had already suffered and pressed the attack. Despite a continuing hail of anti-aircraft fire, deadly surface-to-air missiles, and counterattacks by MiG interceptors, Major Dethlefsen flew repeated close-range strikes to silence the enemy defensive positions with bombs and cannon fire. His action in rendering ineffective the defensive complex enabled the ensuing fighter bombers to strike successfully at the important industrial complex without loss or damage to their aircraft. The mission appreciably reduced the enemy's ability to provide essential war material. Major Death Lefson's consummate skill and selfless dedication to this significant mission were in keeping with the highest traditions of the U.S. Air Force and reflected great credit upon himself and the armed forces of his country. And for his extraordinary heroism and courageous action, Air Force Major Merlin Death Lefson was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor.
The Air Force Association is proud to bring you Heroes of the Air, dedicated to those who earned the nation's highest military award, the Congressional Medal of Honor. Their service and sacrifice reflect an ideal that puts others and country above self. AFA salutes all men and women in the Air Force who so selflessly serve our country each day at home and around the globe. Heroes of the Air is produced by Pelcom Communications in association with Radio America.
Tonight's City Council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
If I could be you, if you could be me, for just 1 hour, if we could find a way to get inside each other's mind, if you could see you through my eyes instead of your ego, I believe you'd be surprised to see that you've been blind. Walk a mile in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes. And before you abuse, criticize and accuse, walk a mile in my shoes. Now your whole world you see around you is just a reflection, and the law of karma says you're gonna reap just what you sow. Yes, you. So unless you've lived the life of total perfection, you better be careful of every stone that you should throw. Yeah. And yet we spend the day throwing stones at one another. Hey!
Tonight's city council meeting is in recess and will return in just a short time. Thanks for listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL.
She was only 16, only 16, but I loved her so. But she was too young to fall in love, and I was too young to know. So why did I give my heart so fast? It never will happen again. But I was a mere child of 16. I've aged a year since then. She was only 16.
Well, we are waiting for staff to finalize the wording. Otherwise, we are past our start time, and we would have already started.
Tonight's city council meeting is in recess and will resume in just a moment. You're listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, Paso Robles, Atascadero, and Templeton. We'll be right back. Tonight's city council meeting is in recess and will resume in just a short time. You're listening to The Right Choice, AM 1230 KPRL.
Okay, we're ready to come back in the session. We'll come back from the break, I should say. Staff has completed their wording of the additional conditions or changed conditions that council asked for. So I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Dunsmore to read those conditions. I'd like the applicant team to listen very carefully to ensure that you understand and agree to, agree, but if you have any concerns, to express those concerns. So, Mr. Dunsmore.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to just go through several of the conditions that we have suggested modifying based on City Council comments, and those begin with in your packet, condition number one, and that's in the exhibit, the draft resolution exhibit A, which concludes the conditions of approval for the Home Depot and then Chick-fil-A. And condition number one would be modified to add the language, construction phasing shall occur so that certificates of occupancy shall be issued in the following order: drive-through restaurant, retail shell, and car wash.
Okay, I'm reading. As you read those, I'm just going to look to my colleagues to make sure none of them waves, you know, jumps up and down, and also to the applicant so we could address each condition as we go. So far, I'm not seeing any consternation. So go ahead.
Okay, next condition would be condition number, hold on, getting to it. Condition number 14, adding a line in condition of 14, it says existing lighting abutting the railroad right-of-way shall be retrofitted for compliance with city lighting standards. Now, we'll say that condition 14 already talks about the shielding required for new lighting. So that's already covered.
Right. And then, existing lighting, and this only pertains to the lighting that they own on the property in question.
Correct. And then a modification to condition number 16, and I'll read that condition in its entirety, because that a condition says operating hours for the car wash shall be limited to 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Following 6 months of occupancy and again 12 months of occupancy, subject to the receipt of any noise complaints regarding the car wash, staff will evaluate that the site operates in compliance with the city's noise ordinance and may recommend additional measures to reduce operational noise as needed.
We said 3 and 12 months. Did you say 3 and 12?
I didn't. I said 6, so we'll change that to 3 and 12.
3 and 12. So, got it.
Great. So changed. And then the final one was on signage. Let's just find that real quick. And that is under condition number 19, section H is being added, where the city engineer will evaluate the site for the addition of appropriate roadway signs to prevent traffic from entering the residential neighborhood on North Faro Carril.
Okay. Good.
And De Anza, I mean, that's all considered in one residential area, but I believe one of the streets is De Anza as well. I think left is one right, street, I mean, and right's
El Camino
a different
dead ends into Faro Carril, right?
But De Anza, I think, is to the left, is it not?
Okay, so we can just say residential neighborhood to the north.
Yes.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Is there one more or is it?
I believe that's it.
Okay. Applicant, you had a comment?
Really quickly, sorry, counsel. We also just pulled up those conditions on the screen for you to look at as well, so we can follow along a little easier there.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, just a question for you. Could we change certificate of occupancy to building permit? Because things could happen during construction where the retail shell might be ready before Chick-fil-A is, because they're doing a full build out. So to occupy that, to do tenant improvements for our multi-tenant pad, if that is possible, but your discretion.
To my untrained ear, that makes sense. Mr. Dunsmore, do you?
So that would read construction phasing shall occur so that construction permits shall be issued in the following order.
Yeah, do you see any issue with changing it to that?
You could.
The only thing is if they didn't follow through with that construction permit and it lapsed and then they went on to the next construction permit, it's a little open-ended.
So, right, it's a little open-ended as opposed to, we want to say not just to get the permit, but you do the building.
Yeah,
but
I realize one might.
Then again, there could be. I think his concern is can there be an overlap? I hear his concern because what if you're almost done building, you know, the first phase and you wanted to start the next? This would be very prohibitive. So I'm thinking this as we talk. I understand that concern. Sure. So perhaps it should be the construction phasing shall occur so that. Buildings are built in the following order. And I just think that we need to be a little more vague about it with the understanding of what our direction might be.
And if I understand the intent, it's that you don't want the car wash to occupy without a Chick-fil-A, right? So
we
further restrict the certificate of occupancy of a car wash to be predicated upon a certificate of occupancy for Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, you could say, I mean, the
that'd work for me. I'm not too fussed about whether the retail shell opens it, you know, gets built or opens at the same time as Chick-fil-A. That's not going to drive the traffic. And, you know, and nobody gets too fussed about that. So.
Okay, I think he's doing the appropriate wording on the screen here. We can just follow. You're really going to say of the drive-through restaurant, correct?
I mean, yeah, it could just be that.
Yeah.
We can change it.
Okay, does that meet your need? And it meets ours, I think.
It's still waiting to catch up with me on the screen. I've already erased the items 1 and 2. Oh, there it goes.
Yeah, that's fine with us.
Okay, is that council understanding okay? Good. Okay, throw a period on the end of that sentence and I think we'll be good. Okay. All right, that's it. Okay, last call. I think we're ready for a motion.
I would move approval of staff's recommendation with the amendments as just displayed on the screen.
Okay.
I'll second.
I think Councilmember Newsom got the second first. So we have a motion by Councilmember Funk, second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call. Well, no discussion, I assume. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk.
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom.
Yes.
Councilmember Peak.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Daris.
Yes.
Mayor Bourbeau.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. Thank you for investing in Atascadero. We appreciate it. Okay. With that, we are ready to move on to management report H1, zoning code update, continuation of our discussion on mixed-use zones and standards. And we're going to go back to Mr. Phil Dunsmore, our community development director, for this.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. And we're back again at you for a discussion about zoning. And we want to be able to bring you little tidbits as we go through this process. And I hope that it helps us in the long run get there. So tonight, we're not going to be asking you to take an action. Again, we're going to give you some of the material for the zoning to get your feedback. And again, it's preliminary feedback. We're still developing these standards. Tonight, we don't have the benefit of having our consultant. We're going to be giving you a presentation and talking about these updates. We did miss out on the zoning district 3 last time, so tonight's main focus is to get through mixed use zone 3. But we're also going to tell you a little bit about what we heard, and we're also going to get into land uses a little bit. Last time we spoke, you did ask us about, you know, what's the zoning going to be like in these mixed use areas, which are predominantly commercial zones today, by the way. And what are they going to be comprised of? So just a reminder, here we are today with that mixed use 3 and the land use discussion. We have one more kind of elaborate discussion coming up on April 14th, and that's going to be talking about all the land uses citywide. We expect that to be a healthy discussion. And then that's it. These are all the sort of nuts and bolts of zoning. And then when we come back to you again later, it's going to be for the whole comprehensive thing. But then we just hope that these preliminary discussions really help aid and educate all of us about this whole process. Tonight, Kelly is going to provide the presentation to you of the details on all the mixed-use zones, and especially on a 3. And then, of course, as we know from last time, we do have a couple of conflicts of interest, so we'll have to bifurcate this out a little bit and ask one or two of you to leave, and then go through some details. You want to take it from here, Kelly? Thank you.
Good evening. So just a quick overview in our general plan. We do have two general plan place types that allow for mixed use, and we've distributed those into some different zoning districts, mixed use 1 through 4. This is our entire new zoning map that we've provided. You can see that our mixed use are kind of the pink purple zones, and you can see how they kind of fit into the big picture with a lot of those areas located along Morrow Road and El Camino Real. This is the map that just highlights the mixed use designations. Some of them are a little hard to see, but you can see where those zones are distributed throughout the city. This just is to provide a little bit of background information. So our mixed-use zones overlay a few different existing zoning types. So when we talk about what uses might be appropriate or what uses exist today, there's not one zoning district that correlates perfect with that. Our new mixed-use zones overlap onto our existing commercial retail zone, our existing commercial neighborhood zones, commercial tourist, commercial professional, commercial park, public, single-family residential, and residential suburban. So we've got quite a few zoning districts where the mixed use will lay in the future. Just an overview of our previous discussion. For mixed use zone 1, which was our zone that flanks El Camino Real with our smaller lots and some with topography, we heard that we'd like to allow for 100% residential with that level of flexibility. Our zoning mixed use, our use table has that with an administrative use permit and some specific findings to ensure that those are not commercially viable sites. Again, a wide range of uses in each zone so that we're not limiting anything too far and we can let the market drive certain locations. In that discussion, the San Jacinto Center was particularly pulled out of Mixed Use 1 and put into the Mixed Use Zoning District that allows for only vertical mixed use, as that is kind of a commercial center on a key corner within the city. For mixed use zone 2, which is up in the Ramona Road area, we heard that we'd like to provide allowances for some existing uses, such as the kennel, which is Woods Humane Society, and some of the religious assembly uses that are currently up there. We also heard maybe requiring a greater setback with our development standards, especially for the upper floors to transition to adjacent single family neighborhoods. So we will be writing those into our development standards for that zoning district. For mixed use four, which is our vertical mixed use zone, which is in key locations over some existing shopping centers, the Food for Less Center, the new Marketplace Center, and locations such as that. We also heard we wanted to allow for a variety of uses so that we weren't stifling any future economic growth in those areas, but that we did also want to ensure compatibility with residential uses in terms of uses that generate noise or odors or things of that nature. So as an overview why we would look at certain uses in certain zones, I know that we provided a draft mixed-use table for you this evening to look at. We are looking for compatibility between residential and commercial uses. So I think what we see on the image is definitely what we don't want, but there's a lot of things in between that we do want. Uses that are generally not compatible in a mixed-use zone might be towing services, high-intensity manufacturing uses, warehousing, contract construction services, veterinarian uses because they tend to have kenneling of animals overnight, and some of those are 24-hour facilities. Some uses might be compatible, and those might have use permits associated with them either at a staff level or at a planning commission level, and some of those might just be applied to certain zones in the mixed use designations. So those might include kennels, sales lots, certain forms of assembly uses, especially outdoor recreation areas. Drive-throughs might be limited in mixed-use zones, although we do have Morrow Road that we're looking at, and so we might want to have some additional allowances broken out by zoning district. Retail stores with large outdoor components might not be appropriate, but might be in certain locations. Same with tattoo and piercing services and minor vehicle service and repair. So we're going to dive into mixed use three at this point in time.
So mixed use three is where we have a recusal? Or should we ask, we should go through. We should go through any council questions or comments on one and four first, correct? Yeah. So do council members have comments, questions, or comments regarding MU1 and MU4? Go ahead, council member Newsom.
I just have tables that are listed in the presentation. So do you want to come back to the tables?
No, I have questions on the table as well. And I think as long as in your particular case, what is it, MU3? So if your comments pertain to 1, 2, or 4, go ahead.
Okay.
1 or 4 right now. 1 or 4, correct.
Okay. So on page 125, we start using the mixed use districts allowed land lease uses and entitlement requirements. I had some questions, like on here, it doesn't list anything for MU1 or 4 for animal care services, veterinarian, but we have a handful on ACR. How does that fit in?
I believe we looked at some of the veterinarian services last time, and the particular one by the intersection of El Camino and Santa Rosa is not within the mixed use overlays or mixed use designation.
What about the one that's on just past Del Rio?
They're on the west side of the freeway though. That and the vet hospital.
Is that
hospital,
not a mixed use either?
I mean, they're on the west side of El Camino, so they're not part of
it. No, it is not.
Do we have a map of the mixed use zones? 1 and 4. I didn't see them in the maybe. I think that's the hard part is trying to logistically figure out what we see in our mind as being in a mixed use zone and then looking at the map and going, wait a minute, it's not. Okay. So that answers my question on that. And then drive-through sales and services, it says administrative use permit. And in a special regulation says drive-through sales and services limited to retail, pharmacy, financial services, and banks in mixed use zones. But isn't ECR between San Anselmo and Del Rio 1 and 4? I guess my question is we have, where do we address not having drive-throughs allowed in that corridor from San Anselmo to Del Rio? Nothing in there says that there is a moratorium on that, or how do we read that limitation?
So that is more based on our council resolution, because the zoning districts are not going to line up perfectly with the locations that we want to limit and revisit traffic analysis for drive-through restaurants. So those are going to span multiple zoning districts as we move forward. Some will be commercial. It might bleed into some mixed use. And so that's still going to be regulated through council policy.
So council policy is not as a whole reflected on here. Council policy is on top of these allowable uses.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
In that case, though, it also states that drive-through sales and services are limited to pharmacy and banks in the mixed-use areas, correct?
Correct, except for a portion of Morrow Road is what we're proposing opens up farther.
But we'll hold that
okay.
Shortly. And then contract construction services outdoor, there's nothing listed for an AUP or a CUP, but don't we have construction services outdoor on ECR as well? Or is that not considered in the lumber company? Is that not in a mixed use area either?
For minors, or are you thinking of
no,
another one?
No, the outdoor fence factory.
Fence factory, I don't believe is in our proposed mixed use zones. That would be in our innovation flex.
Innovation flex, thank you. And I think the contract construction is under industrial, is it not? Is that what we put it in earlier?
Where it's also allowed? Yes.
Okay. That's hard to look at these. That's all my questions.
Thank you. I was going to jump in here because I looked at this chart and I was surprised how very few differences there are between the 1, 2, 3, and 4. But specifically, I wanted to ask, since we're talking about 1 and 4, is adult-oriented business shows it as an allowable use in 1. I thought when the city kind of bought out Diamond Adult World and put it where it is now, that was like a special zone for it or something. And I don't have super heartburn about it or anything, but it to see it there just as an allowed use, not a conditionally allowed use or anything, just kind of surprised me. Is there a specific thought process behind that?
The short answer is yes. There's a specific thought process in that the city was involved in significant litigation for years involving the property across from the Carlton and getting that moved to where it is now. Putting conditional use permit requirements on what is otherwise known as First Amendment protected activity can run into some concerns if that conditional use permit process is used to prevent that type of conduct going on. So that's why there's an allowable use there. One of the things that we did during the meeting is try to get the copy of the settlement agreement with Diamond Adult World to see what was in there. And it does talk about where the permissible uses of the business can be. It says it can continue to operate so long as it's in a legally permissible zone.
Right, understand that. I mean, obviously cities have to allow this somewhere. They have to. Totally understand that and accept that. Just by it being allowed, this would essentially say it's allowed anywhere in the MU1 zone. And so you, not that you would have a proliferation of them, but it kind of implies that you could.
There are also additional operational requirements that are currently in the zoning code with radius requirements. So they can't be within 1,000 feet of a school, park, a number of other type of properties. So there are other restrictions that are currently in the zoning code that would address that.
Got it. Thank you. And then on page 126, there's data and computer services centers not allowed in any of the zones, 1 through 4. What's the... If I might ask, that sounds like something we would desire potentially. Are those bigger than I'm thinking and therefore not appropriate to these places? Or why is they not considered allowed?
Yes, that's not a small scale operation.
Okay.
These are very large, like server farms.
Got it. Okay, understand. And then emergency shelters, specifically mentioning low barrier navigation centers as allowed in all of the zones as an allowable use. Again, I thought when Echo was put into place, there was like a PD overlay or some sort of special zone, if you will, created for that purpose. This would imply that that would be allowed throughout these mixed-use zones as a matter of right.
Echo falls under slightly different definition. This definition is very specific and regulated by state law and is required to be allowed everywhere residential or everywhere commercial is allowed.
Okay, good answer. Thank you very much. And I think that's all my questions, so I'll continue on from my right with Councilmember Funk.
Following up on the mayor's questions with regard to the adult-oriented business, would it also be an option for staff to discuss with the owner of the existing business if they would prefer to remain in, because that's adjacent, that property is adjacent to commercial zoning, if it would be more suitable for them to simply remain in the commercial zoning so that we would not have to then require adult-oriented business as an allowed use in mixed-use zoning, but allow it for it in the zoning that where it currently exists?
The short answer is yes. There could be those conversations. The settlement agreement does specifically state which zones adult-oriented businesses, specifically Diamond Adult World, can be in. So as long as it was not perceived as either an infringement on the operation or the ability to operate, I don't know that that would necessarily be a problem to do. So that's something we could certainly look at.
I would certainly be more comfortable with having that option explored without having to simply make this an allowed use in the MU1 zoning, given that MU1 zoning is pretty expansive. So it's if it can be done without disrupting legal settlements, it's worth exploring, in my view. Okay. And Councilmember Newsom took care of my question on the drive-throughs. What is the, for the Morrow Road, that's in MU3 that we're not talking about right now. Okay, I'll come back to that. with regard to fitness facilities, is one of the things that we've seen is there a difference between, you know, your typical yoga or Pilates studio, which is the vast bulk of that, of small fitness facilities, which are great tenants and great neighborhood serving businesses. And then we've also seen the impact on nearby neighbors of a fitness center then opening that is a more oriented toward a big weights and 24-hour operation, so that you have neighbors suddenly finding themselves listening to thudding weights at, you know, 3 a.m. and blasting rock music all night. Do we have ways, can staff suggest the ways that that might be managed without necessarily having to require everybody that wants to open a yoga studio from having to get some kind of permit?
We can develop very particular performance standards as part of our special use section in the code that addresses certain things like noise and hours of operation that would not prohibit something that is more quiet.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's fine. I mean, there's a time and place for pumping the weights and but maybe not necessarily right underneath grandma's bedroom. Okay. Let me see. Okay, if I have an additional question that pertains to the tattoo and piercing services, which are AUP uses in 1 and 4, is there any reason that couldn't be just allowed? I mean, it's, you know, this day and age, the people that are getting to tattoos are our adult children. So
that is at the discretion of council. I know you haven't seen our commercial land use tables yet. There are some commercial designations where it is allowed outright, but you could also modify them in mixed use zones.
Yeah, I think it becomes a neighborhood serving business at this in this day and age. And is there any reason to treat medical services, extended care, differently from assisted living facilities?
Again, that is at the discretion of council as well. Those facilities do tend to be more institutional and commercial in nature, rather than a facility where there's just care provided. These are full medical facilities that have different building code and fire code requirements, and they do tend to have a somewhat greater impact potentially depending on their size.
Okay, but they do include that, am I correct in understanding that that category does also include like board and care homes, which is something that seems like you might find it in a mixed-use zone?
I can find the definition real quick for you.
Okay. And while you're looking on that one, let me ask one other question, maybe that Phil can answer. I want to make sure I'm understanding recycling facility, small collection, correctly, that could include like a vending machine for cans or something, or some kind of drop-off for your batteries or that, if somebody develops that.
That doesn't have to be a commercial scale distribution or collection center, but those are the things you see at the front of or inside of a grocery store, for example.
Okay, yeah, those bins in front of Vons. Okay, got it. Thank you for clarifying that. Anything back? Let me circle back on the extended care medical then.
Yeah, the definition does include board and care homes, but it is specific that it is for medical treatment only. So if there's any facilities that do not offer medical treatment, that is considered assisted living.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Mayor Pro Tem Daris.
Thank you. Question I have, I wasn't here 2 weeks ago, obviously. I did watch the council meeting this afternoon. Thank you all for all the great questions. it did help me to get somewhat caught up. But the question I have is on the lodging for bed and breakfast. Are any of these zones, M1 through 4, do they allow for single family residences in any of these? Like, it's just a standalone single-family residential house?
Not necessarily. These are designed to have sort of that multifamily type development in them. Some of these zones have single-family houses in them that can remain. And in fact, our non-conforming standards, the way they're written on those, are pretty flexible, so those can stay. But they're not designed to develop a new single-family residential neighborhood.
So if there was a single-family residence in one of these zones that's non-conforming, that is